So yesterday we were dealing with the third verse. Narupamasyeka tatho vilabhyade nanturna chadir nacha sampradishtha asyuthamenam suvirudhamulam asangashastrena tridhena chitva. So the entire phenomenon of cyclic existence, of birth, life, rebirth, and then the continued rotation along this cycle of existence is compared to a mighty peepal tree with its roots above and branches, buds, and then some secondary roots below. The root is the real cause, the absolute reality from which this tree of cyclic existence, worldly existence, originates. We are only aware of the existence of the tree, not its roots. So long as we are not aware of the true nature of the roots, the real nature of the Supreme Reality, we remain entangled in these branches of this tree of worldly existence, attracted, tempted, and worked upon by worldly desires and our mind. And so long as we are aware of only this world, we are not aware of the roots from where this world comes. We can get out of this entanglement. We can get out of this bondage. We can break the shackles, the chains that bind us to this continued cyclic existence of birth, life, and rebirth. We can get out of this wheel only when we realize that this world is in fact not different, not distinct from the roots from which it emerges. So long as we see the name and form, we are able to see only the world. And this freedom from this bondage is possible only through one means. There is only one instrument by which we can cut the chains that bind us to this world. And that instrument is called here asanga or detachment. Because it is attachment that causes the rotation along this wheel of cyclic existence. As I said earlier, whatever we do with some desire creates attachment. And whenever there is attachment in whatever we do, it creates a bondage. That's why we cannot help doing certain things in a certain way because of the force of accumulated tendencies and impressions. Sometimes strong, deliberate effort is necessary to start spiritual practice that you find in our own spiritual life. We postpone, we procrastinate, or sometimes we try to find some excuses to justify our own lethargy or our postponement or procrastination. Why? Because the negative tendencies which bind us to this world are so strong that we are not able to start an effort to break the chains. But once you are able to develop the power of detachment, then this world itself appears to be non-distinct and non-different from the roots from which it comes. After all, a tree can never be completely separated from its roots. A tree can never be completely distinct and different from the roots from where it originates. So once we develop this detachment, we slowly begin to understand the world itself is not different from the roots. The tree itself is not different from the roots from where it emerges. That's why, you know, as I mentioned a number of times earlier, when Swami Turiyanandaji was passing away, he asked some of his attendants and junior Swamis. This happened in Benares. And he asked them to repeat Brahma Satyam Jagat Satyam. The idea Brahman is real, the world also is real. The roots are real, roots Brahman, the origin, and tree also is real. But tree as tree is not real. Tree as tree non-distinct and non-different from Brahman is real. Tree minus its name and form. World minus its name and form. Because when we look at the supreme reality, the absolute principle, through this prism of name and form, in other words, time, space and causation. Because time, space and causation operate through the media of name and form. And then we see this world as different from the roof. We see the world as different from Brahman. But the moment we are able to realize that this world, when looked upon without association with name and form, is Brahman itself. Again, it is very easy to understand this if you remember that analogy of rope and snake. When there is rope, when it is not visible, when there is not enough light, we mistake it for a snake. And when you see the snake, you don't see the rope. And when you bring light, then when it is clear to you that it is rope, then you don't see snake anymore. So when we look upon the entire existence as non-distinct and non-different from Brahman, then world also is real because it is non-distinct from Brahman. Just that the so-called snake, which you saw earlier, is now realized, recognized as rope itself. The so-called stick, because you mistook the rope for the stick, that stick itself is now recognized as rope itself. That is the secret. At the experience level, when a spiritual aspirant speaks from the standpoint of absolute reality, from the standpoint of intimate experience, then he says, Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam. Brahman is real, world also is real. Because there is no more world for him. Just a snake has vanished when you brought light. So also, when you realize Brahman, you understand the so-called world was nothing but Brahman itself. You mistook it for the world because you associated it with name and form. Just as goldsmith doesn't see golden instruments. He sees only gold. The pot maker sees only clay. That's why from the highest standpoint, there is no world, this is Brahman. This point can be better understood. Again, if you remember one interesting example which Sri Ramakrishna gives in the Gospel. Suppose you are approaching a building, a three-story building. You enter the gate and you find the gate is made of brick. And as you drive, you find even the gravel road also is made of brick. And when you enter the ground floor, you understand it is made of brick. And say first floor, second floor, all you understand it is made of brick. And when you reach the third floor and the terrace, then you understand oh, everything is made of brick. And when you stand on the top of the building, that is, when you stand at the level of experience, you can say the whole building is made of brick only. That is the experience level. But when you travel from ground floor to first floor, second floor, third floor, you are traveling through the realm of philosophy. At the philosophical level, you have to distinguish between what is absolutely real and what is just relative. World is relative, Brahman is absolutely real. But at the experience level, you understand from the terrace, when you look at it, you understand the gate, the road leading to the house, first floor, second floor, third floor, everything is made of brick only. Then what? Then you can't say there is no such thing. From the standpoint of a bricklayer, a brickmaker, you say everything is brick only. For convenience sake, because the whole thing is divided into three stories for you to stay. That is why, you know, from the Vyavaharika point of view, Vyavaharika in Advaita, Vyavaharika means from the common sense, relative experience point of view, common sense point of view, there is distinction between the absolute and the relative. But from the absolute point of view, there is no distinction between the absolute and relative. But this experience is reached only through one instrument, and that instrument is detachment. The moment you get established in detachment, then you are no more part of the world. You live in the world, but you can live in the world without worldly, without being worldly minded. Just like a boat, you can travel in a boat when the boat is sitting on the surface of the water. So you are not affected by the water. This is the essence of the third mantra, no, fourth mantra. Now, the fourth mantra says, the supreme goal is to be investigated into, it should be sought after. And when you reach that level of supreme experience, you realize you are no more this body which comes and goes, which is born and which grows and dies. This relative world no longer exists for you. You may live in this world, but you are not of this world. You may live in this world, do your duty, all your responsibility, but you are not affected by it. In the Mahabharata, there is a famous verse related to a great king. Remember, he was not a saint or sage meditating in a cave in a forest. A very busy man and a busy administrator. Janaka is his name. So, Janaka was sitting in his court, and there were a number of philosophers, theologians, sitting around him. And somebody reported, the city is on fire. Then Janaka made all arrangements for putting out the fire. But he also made a declaration, Mithilayam Pradeeptayam Name Kinchit Pranasyati. The meaning is this, Mithila is the capital of Janaka, in today's Bihar, state of India. So he says the entire city is on fire. In fact, the city belongs to him. You know, in ancient times, kings were dictators in those days. Everything belonged to the king. So, but he was an ideal king. Janaka was not a tyrant. He was an ideal king. So Janaka said, well, the Mithila is on fire, but I am not going to lose anything. Nothing is going to be destroyed. Anything which belongs to me is not going to be destroyed because nothing belongs to me. He was a great jnani, and he was a great jnani Jivan Mukta. You can find Janaka as a very active debater in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, where he holds long conversations and dialogues with Yajnavalkya, the greatest sage of that time. So, see, here you find, but on the other hand, these philosophers, who have not reached the level of experience, theologians. They rushed to their respective homes. They didn't have much to lose, perhaps. Only one home and maybe some property. But Janaka had to lose everything. But he made all arrangements, but he said, well, I'm not going to lose anything. And he noticed that a small poor man, a beggar perhaps, who must have come to the palace to seek a favor from the king, he was rushing home, running fast to his small hut to save whatever was there so that it won't be burnt to ashes. So this is the story. So you can find the king who was busy in the secular world of activities could live in this world with this idea in mind. This is called detachment. I mean, he lived in the world, he was part of the world, but he did not belong to the world. That means through detachment he had cut asunder the bondage, the chains that bind him to this worldly existence. Now, the fourth mantra says, this is the supreme goal which everyone should strive to reach, should strive to attain. And once you reach there, you are no more part of this worldly existence. Your chains are cut off, your bondage is cut off, you become ever liberated. So, from the standpoint of a spiritual aspirant, the Gita says, Tameva Chadyam Purusham Prabhadhi Yata Pravritti Prasada Puran. I take refuge in that supreme divine person, the real Adi Purusha, primal Purusha, means the real supreme truth, the supreme reality, which is the source of the universe. I take refuge in him. It is Brahman or Atman, the supreme absolute reality, because that supreme reality is the source of all human actions, the entire cosmic process. For ages, this endless flow of worldly activities, this endless phenomenal world, endless in the sense, those who remain caught in this worldly existence, there is no end. Because where do you find the end of a cycle? A cycle has no beginning and no end and no middle. Either every point in a cycle is a beginning, an end and middle, or it has no beginning, no end, no middle. Anything which has no beginning will have no end and there's no middle also. So where do you find the beginning of a cycle? So that's called, this world is, you know, anadi, it is endless. Endless for whom? Endless for those who remain caught in this, because they go on rotating along this way. We do certain things and accordingly we suffer or enjoy, and again we are reborn, and again this process continues. So there is no end. But there is an end. The moment you cut asunder, you cut the chains that bind you to this world, the world comes to an end for you. That's the idea behind. Because then, now the question arises. One of the unique features of this part of the text is, it distinguishes man from the members of the animal kingdom. Because man alone can stand apart from this rotating wheel of worldly existence and ask the question, where am I coming from? Where did I come from? And how can I get back the place from where I came from? And you know, that's why in this context Swamiji says, maybe referring to this, Swamiji says, man is a man only so long as he is struggling against his nature. His nature, Swamiji meant external nature. You know, animals, the members of the animal kingdom are part of this natural, automatic world which flows from life to life. But man can stand apart outside the way and ask the question, well, is this the end of everything? And this question very often occurs in the form of the question, what is the mystery of death? A subject which is discussed in many scriptures related to Vedanta and even great books like Bhagavata Purana. In the Katha Upanishad, you know, day for yesterday, one of our devotees was reading the story of Nachiketa. Nachiketa asks for three boons. First boon, he asked for material prosperity. Chanda Sankarpa Sumanayadhasya Vidaga Manyu Gutumamma Abhimurtyo Tut Prasistamma Abhyode Prasida Edatrayana Prathamam Varambrane. I won't go into the details of the story because there is not enough time, just half an hour. So his teacher Yama asked him, you remain 3 days in my home without food. You ask for three boons as a compensation. And Nachiketa first, the small boy, who reached Yama's abode, the Lord of Death. You can read the Katha Upanishad. So, the first boon which Nachiketa asked for was, when I go back to my home, my father should not be angry with me. Which is related to the immediate domestic needs of any ordinary man. The second boon that he asked, up to this level, all established, revealed religions have reached. Nachiketa asks, this life in this world may be happy and prosperous, but what happens after death? So I want to live, I want to enjoy heavenly comforts after death. You please give me that bone. Sattu surgim adhesh mrityu, like that, you know, Nachiketa, prabruhitam saddhanaya matyam, surgaloka amrutum bhajande, edatrayanam dhityam varamrani. I am asking my second bone. These gods, celestial beings, they enjoy eternal comforts in heaven. I also want to enjoy heavenly comforts. Give me this bone, second bone. But, you know, these three bones which Nachiketa asks, in a way, symbolize the spiritual evolution of humanity in general. Most of the great religions of the world, except the religion of the great mystics who were born everywhere, in all religions, in all nationalities, most of the established religions end their ideal of life with heaven. And heaven is nothing but an extension of whatever comforts we can have in this world. Nothing more. So the third boon Nachiketa asks is, Yeyam prete vichikitsa manushi asti tige nayam asti vichayegi edad vidya manushishta stoyaham varanam esha varas tritiya. This is the mantra in the Katha Upanishad. Nachiketa asks, some people say, well, after death, everything comes to an end. That's the end of the journey, end of the road. And according to some other people, something continues to exist even after death. Please teach me the mystery of this supreme truth. Because once you understand the mystery of death, you understand the mystery of life also. Because mystery of life and mystery of death are really the same. Because death means end of the physical body. If you think that's the end, it means your life comes to an end. It's an eternal, you know, this straight line progression, linear progression theory. But on the other hand, if you believe that death is only a creative crisis, it is only a semicolon in the long journey of human life, not a full stop. It continues in another form. Then there is something much more to be sought out. So then, in answer to this request for the third boon, Yama describes the mystery of death, and that means the supreme knowledge of identity of individual soul with Brahman, the supreme knowledge of Advaitic realization, non-dualistic wisdom, that is being taught by Yama to Nachiketa. In response to the request for this third boon. Now, here in this mantra, the teacher says that I take refuge not on this visible world, but on the supreme truth from which this world flows, the world originates. And this inquiry is possible. This resignation, this investigation into the origin of the mystery of the universe and mystery of life is possible only for man, not for anybody else. Because if you try to solve the mystery at the level of worldly existence, there is no end to it. As you know, as physics expands further and further, human beings or even the earth in which human beings, 7 billion human beings inhabit, is only a tiny speck in the cosmic phenomenon. And there are any number of galaxies and constellations of stars. So, to try to understand analytically the mystery of the universe is like an attempt to count the number of grains of sand in a seashore. You cannot come to an end of it. But if you take one grain of sand and try to analyze and understand its mystery, then you can understand the nature of the entire sandy expanse in the seashore. So the Upanishads try to understand the supreme secret of human existence by investigating into the very origin of the universe. And the origin of the universe is Ashwatha Moolam. That is that original root from which this world comes into existence. And the original root is designated here as Adhya Purusha, means the primordial person, the supreme reality, which is the origin of the universe. That is the mean, from which the entire creation flows, originates. Now, in the fifth mantra, gives the attributes or the characteristics of those great persons who make an investigation into the true nature of origin of the universe, the primordial person from which the entire universe comes into existence. So, Nirmana Moha Jita Sangha Dosha Adhyatma Nitya Vinivritta Kamaha Dunde Vimuktaha Sukhadukha Sanyehi Gacchanti Amudhaha Padamavyanta. These great men, they are very, very important qualification adjective. You know, Abhudha means those who are completely free from delusion, those who are completely free from the wrong notion that there is nothing beyond this body, there is nothing beyond the present, there is nothing beyond the empirical, the phenomenon. People who are free from this false notion, this delusion. What is the delusion? The delusion that there is nothing beyond this body. There is nothing beyond what I can perceive with my mind and the 5 senses of perception. That is an important attribute of these seekers of truth. And the beginning says, Nirmana Moha, mean those who are completely free from any kind of ego, pride, or any kind of delusion. Delusion, here, there are 2 words, you know, Vimutha. So actually, Amutha actually means somebody who is free from delusion. But in the first part of the sloka, that Moha also means delusion, but idea is those who are free from the wrong notion that I am this body, nothing more. This is the most common delusion found among ordinary human beings. So, Anyone who tries to look beyond the peripheral, the transitory, the empirical, the phenomenal, the immediate present. Anyone who wants to make an investigation, anyone who wants to see beyond and behind this visible universe, should be free from the feeling that I am this body alone, nothing more. And they should also be humble, because without humility, there can be no philosophy, leave alone spirituality. So that's why jitasanga dosha, they are completely free from the evil of attachments. They have conquered, they have won over the evil of attachment. Means they are completely free from any kind of attachment. Because attachment immediately colors our mind. When we are attached to something, we feel that that is a thing to be achieved. If you are attached to the world, you can never be a philosopher. Many of the great philosophers, not only the great spiritual, religious philosophers of India, but even some of the great philosophers of pre-Christian Greek thought, like Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, there was much more in their philosophical speculations than perhaps the philosophers of the Middle Ages, the scholastics and others. And many of the later thinkers who were entangled, who were in fact dominated by the culture of theology, because theology practically wiped out philosophy during the Middle Ages in Europe. But in pre-Christian Greek thought, Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, you find this free, independent search, investigation into what is the truth beyond the visible. In fact, they were all, if you read Socrates' dialogues of life and Plato's theories, you can find a lot of humility and the characteristics of a true seeker of truth. You can find. So, jitasanga dosha, they were completely detached. Adhyatma nitya. And another important characteristic necessary, and that's a highly spiritual characteristic, is adhyatma nitya. It means they should be forever contemplating or merged in the contemplation of their inner self. Those who are dwelling in contemplation on their true inner reality. That's the meaning of adhyatma nitya. Those who are introspective. Unless you turn your investigation inward, you can never grow in spiritual life. Because by their very nature, senses normally drag the mind outward. Now, unless a person learns to draw his mind inward, it is impossible for him to try to even think of the origin of the universe, the origin of the true meaning of the existence. Vinivritta kamaha, they are completely free from all desires, sensory desires. Dundehi vimuktaha, liberated from the pairs of opposites, like pain and pleasure. Normally, people generally are attached to pleasure. Any experience that gives them pleasure is an object of attachment. An entanglement. So those who seek pleasure will be happy when something pleasant is experienced, but invariably that pleasant experience will come to an end and it will be followed by its absence, and the absence of pleasure is pain. So to be a true seeker of truth, to be able to look beyond the visible universe, even to contemplate on the origin of this visible phenomenal world, one should be free from attachment to pleasure and pains, duels, these dvandas we call them, the pairs of opposites, like cold, heat, pleasure, pain, and so on. And then such great spiritual seekers should be undeluded, they're free from delusion. They alone get that supreme goal. So the characteristics of real seekers of truth are mentioned here. In fact, it is said that this is the distinguishing characteristic of human beings. They alone can, as I said earlier, can stand apart from this endless flow of life and death. And that is why it is said, you know, man alone can speed up the process of evolution, not physical evolution, cultural or spiritual evolution. Swamiji refers to this in his introduction to Raja Yoga aphorisms, right? Before he begins this long essay, which we started yesterday. Man alone can speed up his evolution. Animals cannot, because animals are guided by instinct, and instincts are purely mechanical. In some much more intelligent animals, these instincts may be more highly evolved. But still they are only evolved instincts, higher types of instincts. But man alone can stand apart and then try to ask the question, what exactly is the meaning of existence? What exactly is the meaning of life? And it is this inquiry that takes a man into philosophy, of the higher philosophy. I'm not talking about utilitarianism, existentialism, unitarianism, and all that. I'm not talking about that. The higher metaphysics I'm talking about. Because it is this inquiry, an investigation into true meaning of existence, that alone can make a man enter the realm of higher metaphysics and philosophy. And certainly, spiritual science. So that's why it is stated. Now, the next verse is very important from a philosophical point of view. Natat bhasayate suryo na shashango na pavakaha yadgatva na nivartante taddhama paramam mama. The literal meaning is this. This supreme reality, it is not illumined by sun, because the sun does not and cannot illumine, because it is the source of illumination. Sun cannot lend light to the supreme Atman principle, because this Atman is the essence, the origin of all effulgence. And again, moon cannot illumine this supreme truth. Fire also cannot. And once one realizes the supreme truth, he doesn't return to this world. I was supposed to stop almost 10 minutes earlier, but one more point I shall make clear regarding this, because I touched upon this, the sixth one. Here you find the teacher of Gita wants to establish that this Atman is the light of all lights, the effulgence of all effulgence, the illuminator of all illuminators. Sun is an illuminator, it illumines the world. But sun gets its light from Atman. Moon gets this light from Atman. Fire also gets this light from Atman. So this Atman is called Jyotisham Jyoti, light of all lights in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. I should explain this point, then come to a conclusion, and we will have a question and answer session for a few minutes. But this point should be clear, yeah, once we start. Now, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad contains a very interesting passage where Atman is described as Jyotisham Jyoti. Jyoti means light, but in a higher sense, Jyoti means anything which reveals, or anything in whose presence things become revealed. That's the meaning of Jyoti. So, and the word translation light, the word is translated as light in English. It is perhaps the least inaccurate of possible translations. Now, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad establishes this point. So, he asks the question, you know, Janaka asks a question to Yajnavalkya. Hey, Yajnavalkya, Kim Jyotirayam Purushaidi mean? Well, what is the light which helps man to go about, to do work, to move about? The answer is sunlight. I will take up this subject maybe in the San Francisco Monastery in Sunday lectures. But right now, I shall just, in a few minutes, I shall explain and conclude. And then Janaka asks the second question. Who is the illuminator? What light, whose light enables human beings to move about, to walk about, to do things, to live in this world when there is no sunlight? Then Yajnavalkya answers, moonlight. Suppose there is no sunlight, no moonlight, then what is the light which enables you to see things, to live in this world, to exist? The third answer is fire. So, Surya Jyoti, Chandra Jyoti, Agnir Jyoti. Now, from here onwards, another the dialogue takes a new turn. Well, suppose you are sitting in a dark room. There is no sunlight, no moonlight, and no fire. No candle, not no fire. How do you know things? Answer is Shabda Jyoti, means sound. If somebody makes a noise at a distance, even if your eyes are closed, you are living in a pitch dark room where there is no sunlight, no moonlight, no fire, then by the sound that comes from the object which is moving, you understand there is an object at a distance. Well, for some reason or other, there is this Shabda Jyoti, means that is light in the form of sound, light in the form of sunlight, light in the form of moonlight, and light in the form of fire. Suppose none of these four lights exists. What enables you to know things? The answer is Atma Jyoti. You are able to remember what you did yesterday. You are able to remember what you studied 10 years back. You are mentally able to visualize what you are planning to do. You are able to think and try to make use of your power of inference and come to certain conclusions. So, what is the light? Light here means, please don't understand light as physical light. Light should be understood as something which reveals things, or in whose presence things get revealed. What is that light? There is no sunlight, no moonlight, no fire, and no sound. Suppose you are sitting in a pitch dark room, eyes closed, none of these lights exist. Still you can think, you can meditate, you can contemplate. Mentally you can walk in the streets of San Francisco. How are you able to do that? Like in dream? It is because there is a light within and behind all these lights. If this light is absent, then sunlight cannot reveal anything to you. A dead man doesn't see anything, though he is standing or sitting in under sunlight. So when this Atma Jyoti is present, other Jyotis may become useful instruments. And then also it is this Atma Jyoti, this Jyoti of the self, inner consciousness, the supreme inner consciousness, which enables you to make proper use of external lights. In his absence, all external lights become futile and useless. So, natat bhasayade suryo, see the mantra he says, you know, this Atman is not illumined or lighted up by sun or moon or anything. So, here, you know, the Surya, that is sun, moon and fire. Pavaga means fire. Yadgatvara nivartante tadhama paramamma. And it is the abode of the supreme light which everyone should try to strive to reach. And once you reach there, you don't have to return to this world of cyclic existence. With this, I conclude. Already I have taken more time. Only 10 minutes for your interaction. And the retreat comes to an end. That's not, because every day we take more, 1 hour. Today maybe 40 minutes. So you have only 10 minutes.
Swami, I have a question.
You are, because he should give preference to him, because he didn't get a chance so far. So it's a matter of preference. You know. So you can, maybe you are the sole questioner. Okay. Because others got a chance earlier.
So Swami, you mentioned about the tree and the roots, and you mentioned about the Brahman and connected the universe to it, and they both are true. The only thing you said that universe is true without name and form, right? And how you visualize without name and form the universe?
Well, I gave an example. See, if you take your gold watch, or if you take your golden ornaments to a goldsmith, a goldsmith will judge your ornaments only on the basis of the quality of gold of which it is made. He won't look at the shape or size or anything. The amount of gold which he contains, that's the only criterion by which he judges and values the ornament. Now, a liberated man, he understands the names and forms come and go. And see, anything which comes and go, names and forms come and go, and anything which comes and goes is not eternal. In Vedanta, there are three criteria by which you judge whether a thing is absolutely real or not. One criterion is, it should be the same in the past, present and future. Again, it should be completely free from any of the six changes. Six changes are enumerated as being born, growing, evolving, being born, existing, growing, evolving, decaying and dying out, vanishing. Jayade, asti, vardhade, viparinamade, apakshiyade, nasyati. So being born, because if you are born, if something is born, it means it is not eternal, because it did not exist before it came into existence. And what is birth? Birth is nothing but the appearance of something in the empirical realm, visible form. And then it continues and undergoes all these changes and then dies out. So, it cannot be eternal. And what exists in time cannot be eternal. So, it should be the same in the past, present and future. The third criterion is that it should be the same in the three states of human experience, namely waking, dream and deep sleep states. What you experience in waking state will be different from your dream state. In dream, your dream experiences may be to some extent related to your waking state experiences. But they will not be replica of your waking state experiences. Some relation will be there, but there will be, Vedantin said, Kala Bheda, Desa Bheda and Sukshma Sthula Bheda. I mean, good detail means time difference, then difference with regard to subtlety and grossness, and the difference with regard to space. Okay, and non going. Now, anything which goes beyond these limitations is absolutely real. Anything which belongs to these limitations is relative only. So, and what is relative? Relative our relativity expresses itself in terms of time, space and causation from a philosophical point of view, and in terms of name and form from a common sense point of view. It's clear.
There's a one issue here, that if you take these three things out, real, that is Brahman definition.
But you know, the world, see, remember, the world that you see in front of you, you cannot just take out name and form. When you realize the supreme truth, you are able to see and experience these things in their true nature. So at that stage of transcendental experience, you transcend time and space.
So
see, just imagine, if you want to know this, maybe the easiest way for any student of, any devotee of Ramakrishna Mission, the best way is, you try to read Swamiji's life, and you find how Swamiji lost his consciousness of awareness of the external world when Sri Ramakrishna touched him and gave him a sample of Advaitic experience. First, you know, the room where he was living and all the furniture, all the objects, they slowly vanished, and everything appeared to have merged in a notion of light. This is, and those who want to know and build of this, if you read that Sri Ramakrishna's life, the film, if you watch the film, they have portrayed it in this way. In fact, they have taken this idea, you know. Of course, they must have consulted Advaitic scholars. So, at that transcendental level, you are not looking the world as an ordinary man looks at. The world exists for you, but you realize that it is only relative. Don't think that the world runs away. The world doesn't go away. The world doesn't go away. The world, but you start experiencing the world not the way an ordinary man experiences. Or at a practical level, a man who has reached this transcendental experience will not be affected by the vagaries of worldly life. That is the most visible characteristic. Anyone who has experienced a bit of this transcendental experience will not be emotionally disturbed or affected by the vagaries, by the problems, pain and pleasure, by the changing character of worldly problems. That is the most visible symptom of anyone who has a flash of this mystical experience. I already explained this many times earlier in this session. As I said, you know, a king playing the role of a beggar. That's what I said, you know, many times I have learned this. So, the king won't be affected by the misery, wretchedness of the beggar, like an ordinary beggar. So, this idea. Within him, he always knows that he's a king, he's not affected by this. That's how we understand. Well, this is one example where Sri Ramakrishna gives Swamiji just a touch of that transcendental experience. And then you can also read in Sri Ramakrishna's life how he interacted with Trailinga Swami, Pahari Baba and others. Right. So, we have to understand, a man of this higher transcendental experience doesn't cease to see the world. He continues seeing this world as we see it, but the world doesn't affect him.
He himself changed.
Yes. This lake will be there for him also. But he may not think that taking a boat journey in this lake is the greatest thing that one can think of. He may live in a palace like Janaka was living in a palace. But when the palace caught fire, Janaka was not in a hurry to... He didn't... As a king, it was his duty to call off fire engines to put out fire. But he was not so much affected by that. So that's I gave. I think we didn't get enough time for interaction, but most of you had plenty of time on these eight, nine days. So we will have half an hour free time and then meditation, 11:30.